That's where we're going to leave it now, but we're going to pick it up on part two, and we'll post it at democracynow.org. This has been an astounding discussion. I want to thank Emma Bryant in Washington, Brittany Kaiser for joining us, and Jahan Najame and Karim Amer. The Great Hack is their film. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59. Coming up next, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Our impeached president flirts with all-out war. But what about Hillary's emails? Abe and Joe take your calls.
Join us on Tuesday, January 21st for Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years. A day of special programming looking back at the Trump regime, what happened, why, and the repercussions domestically and internationally. We'll focus on national policy, foreign policy, privacy and surveillance, policing, immigration, labor rights, confronting white nationalism, the environment, and much more. Again, that's Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years on Tuesday, January 21st from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
War! Fredonia's gone to war. Each native son will grab a gun and run away to war.
At last we're going to
At last the country's gone to war.
At last the country's going to war.
We're going to war.
This is a fact we can't ignore.
We're going to war.
This is a fact we can't ignore. We're going to war.
In case you haven't heard before, I think they think we're going to war. I think they think we're going to war.
We're going to war.
I think they think we're going to war.
We're going to war.
Yeah, well, you know, the Marx Brothers had the right idea.
What, going to war?
Yeah, got to go to war.
We're mocking going to war.
We're mocking going to war.
Okay, that was the right idea.
That's the
not
right
the war itself.
Not the war itself.
Okay.
No. The war is stupid.
We've already diverted into a meta conversation.
I think so.
Yeah.
We've got to stop this.
I know.
We can't keep meeting like this. Okay, Abe's back.
Yep, I'm back.
And this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call is 231-8187, and we do want to hear from you, and we have a lot to talk about. And the fact of the matter is that the President of the United States, at his best, was a phony host of a TV show who became so popular that he managed to get himself elected President of the United States and has not successfully engaged in international relations with any country. He's isolated us from Europe. He's isolated us from Asia. He's messed with relations with China. He's messed with relations with the Middle East. He's done illegal and unreasonable things. He's done a lot of bad stuff. And now he's put us in a situation where the Iranians are outraged at our assassination of their second in command.
Let's back up a few steps.
Sure, let's back up a few steps.
Okay, last week there was an attack on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad.
Right.
By a group of Iranian-backed militia.
Mm-hmm.
Which set into motion this chain of events that led to the United States assassinating Iran's top military leader.
Yes.
As one might imagine, that has escalated somewhat. The tensions between the two countries to the point, like
somewhat?
You mentioned, somewhat.
Yes, okay.
To the point, as you mentioned, that we are looking at the possibility of a shooting war breaking out.
Yeah, or some other dreadful things.
some other dreadful things. I'm glad you brought that up, because we need to talk about the other dreadful things. We'll do that a little bit later.
Okay.
So continue, please.
Well, I mean, I assume everybody who takes the trouble to listen to this show is probably as aware as you and I about this. But the thing that is, I think, most important is that we have a president in the United States who does not read, who has no sense of history, who's all about himself, who really, pardon me, believes that his bluster can be a substitute for an intelligent foreign policy.
Yeah, and let's not leave out the context here, which is, of course, an impeached president.
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah. How could I forget that?
Yeah, and of course, that's the analysis that springs most readily to mind, right?
Yeah.
He's obviously very upset about being impeached. Worried
Poor
about
guy.
What it means for his electoral prospects. Worried, of course, about that because I think he realizes at a very basic level that the only way he's going to avoid prison is to be elected to a second term.
Right.
Therefore, a splendid little war with Iran might be just the ticket.
Only and if you it listen, ain't going to be little.
No. If you listen to Amy Goodman before this show, which I'm sure many of you did, you heard them at the end there talking about research from Cambridge Analytica. We've talked about that Cambridge Analytica on this show a number of times. They were responsible for, essentially, the Russians being able to influence the 2016 election to the extent that they did. They talked about how that data is still being used to influence electoral politics in the United States. And they gave an example, a real-world example of a sitting U.S. senator whose campaign was explicitly aided by the sort of warmongering imagery and rhetoric that is going to accompany this war. So we have an impeached president looking to preserve his freedom as a private citizen. We have another nation with whom we've had a long history of unstable relations, and we have an electoral climate that is ripe for further manipulation. And of course, we've done nothing whatsoever to prevent that sort of manipulation.
Oh, quite the contrary.
Quite the contrary, yeah.
Oh, well, I think we've laid it out. You all probably are as aware as we are of the horrible possibilities. So we should go to the phones, 231-8187. Charlotte, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just calling to point out one thing, because I find it very irritating to hear people say everything just started with this one incident where Iranian-backed Shia killed an American. A lot of Shia that are backed by Iran and Iranians who were in Syria were actually bombed and killed by the United States. So it didn't all start with one incident, with one retaliation. You have to go back to the number of people that were bombed. I mean, there's a long history, but you also have to go back to why specifically did things happen, and there's a long series of events. And the U.S. bombed Iranians who had been invited into Syria to help Bashar al-Assad fight ISIS. And we were also fighting ISIS and had our allies. And we also bombed the Iranians who were fighting ISIS. So that's all I wanted to say, because it's more complicated, but it's buying into the official White House narrative that there was like one incident that we had to retaliate against. It goes much further back than that.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right, thanks for the call.
She's right. Absolutely. She's right. Correct.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that this president inexplicably moved away from a very reasonable deal about not nuclearizing Iran.
Yeah.
In other words, we had an opportunity to keep them from having nuclear weapons, and he walked away from it inexplicably.
Yeah. Actually, if we're being completely honest about the context here, I think we need to go back to 1953.
Oh, my.
When the Iranian Prime Minister, Mohammad Mossadegh, who was at that point laying the groundwork for the transition for Iran to become more or less a modern democracy, was overthrown by a coup backed by the United States Central Intelligence Agency and some say also by British Petroleum.
Oh, no question. British Petroleum was involved.
British Petroleum. That reinstated the Shah, the king of Iran. And then that, of course, led directly to the Islamic Revolution that followed, that installed the religious government that now runs things.
Yeah, and people, you know, the Shah was a very grand king, did a lot of grand stuff, not in much for his own people, and in fact had the Savak, which was a terror organization. And the way it operated is if you were considered his enemy, if you happened to be a woman, or I guess a man, you would be raped and tortured and eventually killed. And this was a routine thing that the United States did nothing about.
No, exactly. In fact, we were fine to countenance it because we had just backed this coup, which granted us unfettered access to Iran's mineral resources.
Right. And in addition, it stopped the advances of the Soviet Union in that region.
Yeah. So if we fast forward a little bit to the 1980s, Iran and Iraq get involved in what amounts to a proxy war between the United States and the Soviet Union, the United States backing Iraq, the Soviets backing Iran. This war lasts the better part of 10 years, has devastating economic consequences for both sides. Both sides end up further entrenched under their repressive regimes. Saddam Hussein, the American-backed dictator in Iraq, and of course the rule of the Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran. Now, what Trump has managed to do in one fell swoop is not only to reunite internally the political situation in Iran. Up to this point, there was a burgeoning pro-Western, pro-democratic movement at work in Iran, which seems, at least for the time being, to have been sublimated in the face of this new nationalist uprising against the Americans. So Trump's managed to unify Iran internally against the United States. And here's the even bigger coup: unify Iraq with Iran. The Iraqi parliament has now voted to expel United States troops from the country. So Trump has managed to do in the space of a few short days what I think most people believed was not only impossible, but incredibly ill-advised.
Yep. It's all true.
And it's staggering the extent of this incompetence.
It's very scary. It's extremely scary. What really seems to be the desire of most of the nations in that region is at this point to have the United States get the hell out.
Yeah.
Which previously was not the position of those nations.
Yeah. I heard an interview earlier this morning with a representative of Iraqi Kurdistan, which is that section of northern Iraq.
Oh, the poor Kurds, messed over by Trump.
Messed over by Trump, yet the gentleman I heard was expressing the Iraqi Kurds' willingness to offer, and it feels so strange to say these words, to offer safe haven to United States troops in the area, even after Trump's betrayal.
Yeah, the terrifying thing here is the way in which this was done, the underhandedness of it, gives legitimate reason to Iran to use any method that they can find to hurt the United States. And we don't get to call the shots. There's no rules of war anymore. The whole situation is a chaotic situation. The weirdest thing is here's this guy who at best was a creepy mafia-connected real estate mogul who ends up with a television show. I blame NBC, by the way, for this.
I think you make more of that than this there. But go ahead.
Yeah, the ratings count. And who runs this fakey show helping people be business people. And then with using that as a springboard, actually gets himself into real politics, never learning a thing, never caring about a thing. And the Republican Party, for reasons which only they can understand, fall in behind him, collapse against him, initially saying they don't want him, and then realizing, oh, he's got charismatic qualities, and then they end up supporting the guy, and now they can't back down, apparently, or won't.
Charismatic qualities is debatable.
Well, but charisma is not a moral thing. Charisma is a psychological thing.
And a willingness to tap directly into
fear.
Fear and racism that have characterized the American body politic forever.
Right. That's really important, and it's really true.
Yeah, it is absolutely true. It's really pretty staggering, the consequences of this, not the least of which are derived from the fact that Iran has, in the estimation of the United States military establishment, a robust capacity for cyber warfare.
Right.
Disruptive attacks on banking systems, security systems, and on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, the nuclear deal that we made with Iran was in light of the situation, a really good deal for everybody. And a big compromise. And having just dumped it for no apparent reason puts us in a situation where suddenly Iran feels hurt and angry and vengeful. And then we go and kill their second in command.
Yeah.
And we say, well, we were doing this to prevent an attack. What attack? Where's the evidence? What are we talking about?
Yeah, it sounds like 2003 all over again, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Our European allies have come forward voicing their skepticism, saying we have not seen the evidence about these imminent attacks. It's smoke and mirrors all over again. And if you're concerned about this, you have every right to be. If you're frightened about this, you probably should be. We've seen the consequences of what happens when the United States government lies to get the country involved in an extended war in the Middle East. To sum up, it ain't good.
It's more than ain't good. It's scary ain't good.
It's scary ain't good. Thousands of Americans dead, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians dead, a country whose economy has been essentially broken, enmeshed in a long-term occupation by a foreign invader, us. It goes on and on and on.
Well, and in fact, what Trump threatened Iran with was actually a recognized war crime. That is, we will destroy all your historic sites.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no limit to the man's perfidy and disgustingness and ignorance and viciousness. And everybody's going, oh, instead of going, no.
Yeah, and expressing these things over Twitter. I really can't. This continues to boggle me on a regular basis. The President of the United States is using a social media platform to run the foreign policy of the United States, to issue edicts to the American Congress. One has to think that at a certain level, doesn't this violate Twitter's policies, their use guidelines for use? I mean, isn't threatening an international incident's grounds for being kicked off of Twitter? One would think so. Perhaps the most patriotic act that Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, could carry out at this moment is to kick the President of the United States off of his platform.
Profit. It's all about the Benjamins, really. And that's where we've gone historically at this point.
Hey, this is true.
It's really scary. Hey, we got a lot of people calling us. 231-8187. Let's go to Juan. Juan, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe. It's not inexplicable.
Okay,
go on.
This whole deal with Iran. You remember when General Wesley Powell said he went to visit his buddy in the Pentagon and the guy pulled a piece of paper off his desk with seven more countries or six more countries that the U.S. was going to go into in the Middle East?
Well, actually, I don't remember, but okay.
There's a video of him being interviewed on a show. I just saw it the other day. I can't remember what show it was. And he said, yeah, I was visiting a buddy of mine in the Pentagon. He used to be the NATO commander for the U.S. Mm-hmm. in Europe. And then he ran for president, General Wesley Clark. And he was being interviewed after, I don't know if we had already attacked Iraq or not.
Mm.
But I think it was after, and his buddy told him, yeah, we got a list of seven more countries, or six more countries. And Libya was on the list, Syria was on the list, Iran is on the list. This is not inexplicable. This was a plan that started in the Bush administration, was carried on in the Obama administration. They went into Libya, they started arming people in Syria, the wrong people in Syria. We just killed a guy who was a major factor in beating ISIS. This guy controlling groups that were fighting against ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
Iran was helping us fight ISIS.
Well, yeah, actually, ironically, almost every legitimate state in the region was terrified by ISIS.
And we turned around and snuff this guy. It is totally inexplicable. We got people in charge who don't care how they make money. They don't care whether it destroys the planet. They don't care whether millions of people die under their bombs. They don't care about them making money.
No, I think you're right. I want to give, there's a lot of people calling. I want to give them a chance. I agree with most of what you're saying. I don't remember the specific incident you're talking about, but I don't doubt it.
Want me to send you a link to that video?
Yeah.
Sure.
Send it to the KBOO address.
All right. I'll send it to KBOO.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, John Bolton has wanted to go into Iran for a long, long time.
God, he's going to testify.
No,
maybe.
No, he's not. And we'll get to that if we
okay.
have time.
Okay.
He's wanted to go into Iran for a long time. And there's an anecdotal recollection around the time we were invading Iraq in the early 2000s where Donald Rumsfeld said something to the effect of real men go to Tehran. And you notice that Rumsfeld never went to Tehran. So draw your own conclusions.
Oh, whoa.
Let's go to York. Good morning.
Good morning.
I
had a couple points. I wanted to also sort of agree with the last caller that to put this into a larger context, this all makes perfect sense if the Trump administration's foreign policy is to be as capricious and unpredictable and dangerous as possible, which plays into their hands of raising the level of terror and fear throughout the world, which is absolutely plays into his warmongering. The other thing is that I've heard recently is that Soleimani was actually on his way as an envoy to bring up some sort of rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which is, again, totally counter to this idea that the Trump administration is trying to bring as much terror and unpredictability into the international situation as possible.
This I don't know. That's an interesting speculation, and there may be evidence for it. I simply don't know. Others here are saying
Engineer Ray says he's heard that as well.
He said, yeah, so it's very possible.
Yeah, so I mean in any event as unpredictable and capricious and ridiculous seeming as this all may be, it does also play exactly into Trump's foreign policy as much as there is a foreign policy, it assures that everybody is on their back heels all the time, and the last thing that he would want would be some sort of rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia specifically.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's a very good point, actually, and it shouldn't be ignored. And I want to thank you. Is there more you wanted to say about that?
No, that's all.
Okay, thanks a lot. You know,
thank you.
It's to me what is most bizarre is the fact that I grew up in a world where there were the Republicans and there were the Democrats, and neither of them was very good, but they were, one was sort of liberal, the other was very conservative, and on and on and on. But now the Republicans have hitched their star to this incredibly incompetent, arrogant, self-centered man who is leading the country into disaster. I mean, he doesn't get any of it. He thinks of it like a business deal of some sort where he has some kind of leverage, which he doesn't really have. Furthermore, in the real world, China now has a bigger economy than the United States, for example. So we're playing and getting more and more isolated. We're playing with fire under the leadership of a cuckoo guy. Is it fair to say Trump is a cuckoo guy?
Yeah, I think that's the kind of sophisticated analysis that people tune in for.
I think you're right. So the cuckoo guy. So we got a lot of people calling us. 231-8187. Len, you're on the air.
Yeah, I actually disagree with a lot of what you're saying. However, I think the most important detail that I disagree with is that the Iran deal that the previous administration developed was never a good deal. Maybe in a matter of a month, with the dream that it actually work and Iran would adhere to the definitions of the deal, was it any good? And that was just a shadow. I just It was a horrible deal. Of all the things you said, I do disagree.
No, I would disagree with that. It was not an ideal situation, no. But in place was a regime of inspection, of verification, of ways to find out whether or not Iran was complying with the deal. All of that is gone now.
No, but Iran was given the right to work on its centrifuges to develop more nuclear material, ultimately to terrorize the world in Israel. So I don't see how having an end game like that is any good for anybody.
They were not being permitted to develop weapons-grade fissionable nuclear material. That was outside the strictures of the agreement. Now, you seem to be alleging that agreement was being routinely violated, but the evidence we have suggests that it was not.
No. Are you familiar with the IAEA?
Yeah.
They did not have full access to Iranian sourced. They could not get to all the material to qualify that it was safe and it was not being more centrifuge activity was taking place. So the police of that deal didn't even have full access to Iran. So the deal.
Wait a minute. Where do you come up with that? Because that isn't what I understand.
I worked for a company that were integrated with the IAEA developing nuclear seals for radiation material. Oh. And the IAEA did not have full access. They had access. So in terms of a binary choice, they had full access, yes, or access, but they did not have full access.
So are you?
Iranian is not a.
I'm not sure what you're arguing here. Are you saying that things are better now in the absence of that agreement?
I'm saying the deal was bad because Iranian are not good characters. They weren't. They full access would mean that we would know for certain that they weren't developing more nuclear material, and they were, simply because they weren't providing full access. Why would you not provide full access?
Okay.
Going back to my original statement, the deal was bad from the get-go.
All right, so are you arguing that things are better in the absence of that deal? I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Yes.
Things are better now. Okay, and we also, our research department indicates that, we lost color. IAEA inspectors were present in Iran up to the point that Trump withdrew us from the deal.
Well, yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what the caller's point is. The compromises that were made were, given the situation, about the best that could have been achieved short of war.
Yeah.
And I think
that's
people
the nature
are forgetting.
Of diplomacy, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people are forgetting, you know, the ideal is nice, but not necessarily achievable.
No.
And this was a way of averting what was, and now again is, a potential disaster. And yes, Israel is at danger. And yes, there is much reason to be concerned about that. And yes, this was always a problem. And yes, that has never been solved.
Yeah.
So, right. You know, there we go.
I want to read a tweet now from the Commander-in-Chief. This was tweeted yesterday.
The Commander-in-Chief?
This is your president.
Your president, not mine.
No, all of our presidents, Joe. You need to accept that.
Okay,
I do? He is the president of the United States.
No, it's just an accident of bizarre history.
Okay. Well, then he's squatting in a very expensive piece of real estate.
He is. He's a squatter.
All right. The president tweets yesterday, "These media posts will serve as notification to the United States Congress that should Iran strike any U.S. person or target, the United States will quickly and fully strike back, and perhaps in a disproportionate manner. Such legal notice is not required, but it's given nonetheless." Now, let's unpack this. Okay?
Sure.
That shreds the Constitution in about three different ways, right off the top. First of all, it is not for the president to inform the Congress that military action shall be taken. It is for the Congress to give permission for the president to act in his capacity as commander-in-chief.
You mean like in the Constitution?
Like in the Constitution. So he's technically correct when he says such legal notice is not required. No, it's not required because it's not legal. But he's saying, look, in my magnanimity, I am deigning to take this pause to tell you, the Congress, that this may very well happen.
And he whether says or not disproportionate.
Right. Whether or not you approve.
He names 55 sites, many of which are actually, if you bomb them, war crimes.
Yeah, exactly. He goes on to tweet, actually this is from the day previous, the United States just spent $2 trillion on military equipment. We are the biggest and by far the best, that's in capital letters, best.
Best.
In the world.
Best.
If Iran attacks an American base or any American, we'll be sending out some of that brand new beautiful equipment their way and without hesitation.
Brand new beautiful right. equipment? Did he actually say that?
He did. He tweeted it.
What a creep.
See, this is how the business of the United States is being conducted.
By tweet.
Yeah, by tweet. That alone should be enough to strike fear into the heart of any constitution-loving American. Or even if you dislike the Constitution and want to revise it, this should still strike fear into your heart because this is crazy. This is not how nation states should conduct their business. I'm not even sure where to begin here. We have the gradual dissolution of the Congress's war-making powers has happened for many decades in the United States.
That's true.
The Constitution explicitly vests the power to declare war in the Congress alone. There is no ambiguity about that.
Well, in fact, the start of World War II, despite the obvious provocation by Japan and the horror of their surprise attack, President Roosevelt went to Congress to get permission to declare war.
Right. And as it turns out, December 8th of 1941 was the last time that the Congress of the United States
yeah,
declared.
You know, we've had the Korean War, which we called a police action.
Right.
We've had the Vietnam War, which we called, I don't know what we called it, a disaster, I would call it.
Yeah.
And so on. The fact of the matter is that Congress has allowed itself to be abrogated frequently in the course of recent history.
This is true. And if you recall, back in the halcyon days of 2003, when we were preparing to go to war in Iraq, one of the things that people paying attention to the situation were screaming about, this radio program included, was the fact that once you give an executive blanket power to use military force, it is highly unlikely mm-hmm. that the executive will ever give that power back.
And it turns out to be true.
The authorization for the use of military force that was passed by the Congress after the September 11th attacks 2001 has been used first by the Bush administration to wage a series of ever-widening conflicts in the Middle East.
With lots of lies.
Was then used by the Obama administration, even as troop levels were drawn down, to justify the expansion of a drone campaign in the Middle East. And now, apparently, although he has not invoked it explicitly, this president is going to use that same authorization for the use of military force to do whatever it is that he's threatening to do over Twitter. If I sound a little frustrated,
you sound a little frustrated.
I am.
Well, it's very frightening, and it's very lawless, and it's very insane, and it doesn't suit the interests of any nation to do what the president is doing right now.
Yeah.
And I mean any nation. I don't think it's good for Israel. I don't think it's good for Iraq. I don't think it's good for even Turkey, which is weird in all of this. I don't think it's certainly not good for the Kurds who've been messed over horribly. Certainly not good for anyone except, it might be good. It might be good for the Russians.
Yeah. I read the first tweet I read about how Twitter posts are going to serve as notification to Congress that the president is illegally taking us to
war. I'm telling you, we got to get rid of that.
Do you know what his very next tweet was about?
No.
Do you want to take a guess?
No.
It was about impeachment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The reason they are not sending, he's quoting someone, Maria Bartiromo.
Bartiromo.
Right.
Who is not a very smart person.
No. And also Lindsey Graham.
It's
not clear yet from this tweet, which I'm beginning to suspect was authored by a not very smart person, who exactly he's quoting. We'll say Lindsey Graham. The reason they are not sending the articles of impeachment to the Senate is that they are so weak and so pathetic. The great scam continues. To be spending time on this political hoax at this moment in our history, when I am so busy, is sad.
The president is busy?
Yeah.
What is he doing? Jacking off?
Well, maybe.
You can see I have a lot of respect for this guy.
Yeah, and free time, it would appear.
Somebody has free time.
Yeah. And then the tweet parade that follows alternates between bellicose statements about Iran and paranoid statements about his impeachment, with a few jabs about the homeless situation in California.
Yes.
This is the mind of our fearless leader.
Fearless? Scared. Yeah. Running scared leader.
Yeah, but he would never admit that. Should we go to the phones?
I think so.
Pear is next. Good morning.
Morning, guys. You know, like I was saying, I think this would be a much better cause for impeachment than the Ukraine business.
Well, I think they may be adding. First of all, I don't think that the charges are limited to those which were followed in the impeachment process. And let's be clear, he's been impeached. They can add other charges.
Well,
that's number one. That's number one. Number two, the problem here is that the Republican Party has folded from any kind of ethical conservative position, which I would disagree with, but would be real, into a follow the leader game when the leader is absolutely clueless.
Well, I don't know. I think I got 2 points. Well, you mentioned Israel. Actually, a few days ago, Netanyahu came out in support of what Trump did, but then after that, he backed away from it.
Well, he's under charges. He seems to be a crook. I mean, you know, it's bad.
So. The other thing is, you know, when you look back for 70 years of U.S. foreign policy, I think it's been a horrible disaster. I can think of very few things that the United States has done in the last 70 years that were really worthwhile. I just think of so many countries overthrown and warlike, situations. It's, Trump is like, well, he's like, I was to say the cherry on top of the cake, but more like a poop on top of the cake, you know? I mean, it's really, look at this in context, which a woman caller did a few, some time ago.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of successful U.S. foreign policy initiatives in the last 70 years. The Marshall Plan?
Yeah, the Marshall Plan was a success. Let's be clear. Given the reality of a very advancing Stalinist regime, it was a success. It took me a long time to understand that. I was largely under the spell of the magic of socialism for a couple of years of my life, not much more than that. But the fact of the matter is that the Marshall Plan was absolutely necessary. It was brilliant, and it was successful.
The establishment of the UN?
Another good example.
Right. But anyway, go ahead, Pear. Sounds like you had some more to say.
Well, I'm just saying that, oh boy, where was it? you think, okay, the Marshall Plan was part of, creating NATO, and you see what they did with NATO. They got NATO right up to the borders of Russia.
Well, that was a big mistake, and I'm glad you mentioned it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like the U.S. has been kind of on a tear for 70 years, and Trump is making it so horribly obvious. Say that.
No, I said that.
But anyway, I just say, keep in mind that the people who have been running our foreign policy for 70 years, they may be polite, they may be soft-spoken, they may be intellectually better than Trump, but, they're what they were up to for the last 70 years has been pretty awful, too.
Fair point. But I don't think it changes the reality of anything we're dealing with at the moment.
Well, I would say go ahead and impeach him, and that would be the greatest and most obvious thing to...
Well, let's be clear. He's impeached.
He's been impeached. Yeah.
It's now a question of kicking him out.
Remove him from office, right.
Right.
Dump him.
Right.
That's a good reason for dumping him. Ukraine business is kind of a little wishy-washy anyway.
Well, okay. Go ahead.
Thanks for the call, Pear. He's right. But I want to take just a moment to make a wider overarching point here. Yes, you can almost always point to previous actions by the United States or by its leaders that in the light of history don't look very good, right? You can look to all these decisions that are antecedents to the situation we're in now. And it's right and good to point all those things out. But those sorts of statements do not refute the positions that we're putting out on the table now. Yes, we can look at decades of American foreign policy history and say, largely disastrous. Yes, but it does not refute any of the statements we've been making about this president and the absolute insanity of his decision-making right now.
Well, and I think it's important, and since it was brought up, it's important to understand that there was an agreement between the United States and the Soviet Union to reduce their potential for a nuclear war against the against Europe. That was an agreement. There was also an agreement not to to take nations like Poland and all of the former Soviet republics and turn them into part of NATO. We, the United States, violated that as soon as it was clear that the Soviet Union was collapsing, and in fact Russia was a state whose actual gross domestic product is smaller than that of Italy. We took advantage of the situation, and the situation, when you're dealing with a very patriotic, trained to be patriotic nation, which is what Russia is, and creates an oligarchic system with a guy like Putin at his head, guy who was a part of the secret services of that nation.
Yeah.
So it's all a colossal disaster, and into that sphere enters this boob with his arrogant stupidity, and we all are going, oh, he's so smart. No, he's not. He's really a bit lucky and the son of a crook himself. Let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Helen, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, Germany is leaving Iraq. Just today, on Twitter, I saw. Why do you think the leader came to Iraq? Because he had a note that the idea that they were going to work on peace. But then they bombed him, and
How did you come up with this note?
I know this stuff. I hear good. I mean, excellent programs. I mean, absolutely excellent programs. Anyway, the other thing is that Trump talked to Putin. Putin said, "Don't do it." Israel said, "Do it." It's been a long time that they could have done it to this man, but they didn't do it. And Trump is being very selfish because he just doesn't want people to look to see what's going on with him.
You know, Helen, I want to support you here because I was being dubious. But it turns out that it is very likely that there was a plan to try to bring Saudi Arabia into a cooperative agreement with, of all people, the Iranians.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Yeah. True. And so it was, they were going to work on peace. The other thing that I was listening to, well, Tom Hartman, and he was saying, for example, you don't kill leaders. Like, everybody knew where Hitler went in the summertime, and nobody would have bombed him. They wouldn't have done it. They don't do it to leaders. They let the people below them fight. It goes way back in history, very, very far away. But
Except remember the Archduke Ferdinand's assassination led to the disaster of World War One. But okay, go on.
Okay, I didn't. I don't have that under my belt as far as knowing that maybe the new.
No, that's real. But
so
but it doesn't
awards.
Matter. Doesn't matter.
What?
It does not matter in this case.
Okay. So. Anyway, I just think what's going to be happening with all this is they're just going to. Everybody else is going to work on their own power, and the United States is going to be all by themselves.
Well, right now, that seems to be true.
Yeah, and Iran, they've got the list of all the hotels of Trump, and they said, this is not about America. This is about Trump.
Hey, well, thank you for the call. That last point, let's game this through, because I was thinking about this on the way to the show this morning. Trump, of course, has been in a violation of the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
Since the moment he took the oath of office.
Oh, yeah.
The Emoluments Clause is very explicit. It says that an office holder in the United States may not profit from that office while in office.
Right. That was one of the earliest concerns of the founders.
And not just the chief executive, although that's what they were most concerned about. You know, but members of the Senate, members of the House, and so on and so forth. You can't use your office to make money. You can make a bunch of it after you're out of office, which many ex-presidents have done, but you can't do it while you're in office. So Trump is still in violation of this clause because he has not divested himself from the Trump Organization. He has said that he has ceded control of that organization to his children.
His children.
But that's a very transparent lie. So he still owns these Trump-branded properties all over the world. Now, as Helen mentioned, the Iranian government has come out and said that this is very much about Trump, the man.
Glad they're making that distinction.
Well, they are, but what might that mean in practical terms? Is that going to mean an attack on United States military assets? Maybe.
Probably.
But also an attack on privately held Trump-branded properties.
You mean he might blow up Mar-a-Lago?
He might blow up Mar-a-Lago.
Oh,
probably
no, not Mar-a-Lago.
Probably not here in the United States, but the Trump Tower in Dubai, in Istanbul.
Yeah.
All over the place.
Oh, in Scotland.
In Scotland.
Yeah, of all places.
In Ireland. All these places where he's been profiting to put up his military detail. Anyway, this is entirely possible in this crazy world in which we now live, that a foreign state, a hostile state, might actually wage war against a chain of hotels.
It's sort of more than weird. It's more than creepy. It's frightening. And what's, to me, most terrifying is that one of the two major political parties in America has totally folded. You know, they originally didn't like Trump. They totally folded under this real tin pot dictator who is absolutely, now there are dictators and there are dictators. This guy is so ignorant. I doubt that he's actually read a book from cover to cover ever in his life.
Oh, I bet he has.
A what book?
Superman. Spider-Man.
Yeah, something like that. Hey, we got a lot of people calling. 231-8187. Francis, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Everybody's talking and my train of thought changes as you guys are conversating. These wars are successful for a lot of corporations.
Oh, yeah.
As I understand it, after this incident in which we assassinated a leader of a country, the corporate military industrial corporations had a great big boom in their profits. So I'm not sure, you know, the method to the madness.
Well, you're right, because the price of oil went up 5%, for example.
On Wall Street, there was a boom in the corporations that have military involvement. It was very noticeable, as I understand it. And that has been the case since, for the last 70 years, as you guys were saying, since Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex.
I'm glad you brought that up, yes.
It has been very successful. If that's the plan, it's extremely successful. The problem is that real people are being harmed and maimed and killed in the process. And as long as our Supreme Court considers corporations people and gives them the flexibility to do the things they do, this will continue. And we, the people, are going along with the program because this man is playing us against each other with the hate rhetoric that everybody...
I'm glad you brought that up.
If somebody actually intended to expose the corruption in this country and who really runs things, this man is doing it. Extremely so. Our Congress is ineffective because there's another corrupt person running the Senate majority, and they're allowing this stuff to continue. There's no reason in the world why the Congress of the United States, if it was operating the way it's supposed to, would allow this to continue.
I think you're absolutely right. Francis, I think most, in fact, all of what you said is correct. I'm going to let some other folks get online, though.
And one thing I wanted to mention, though, that we don't talk about at all, is what's happening in Australia. And if we want to change, flip the script and find another way to make money, it would be to save this planet. All right, take care.
Yeah. And she's making that last point, though maybe a bit odd in the context, is absolutely correct. While all of us are dithering around human behavior, the planet is literally burning.
Yeah. I want to dither around human behavior a little more, though.
Okay, go ahead and dither.
You're right. You're right, of course. I just discovered something really disheartening in taking a quick look at what exactly is either owned by Trump or at least carries his name around the world. Did you know that the Trump Organization operates the Carousel in Central Park, New York?
Oh, that's depressing. And I love the carousel.
They make almost $600,000 a year.
I just really like the Carousel in Central Park.
Yeah, but...
I think he owns the ice rink.
He does. He owns the two ice rinks there.
Gosh, you know, that's really so disappointing. All stuff in my childhood. I'm being petty here.
Let's go to George. Good morning, George.
Hey, good morning, guys. I've been listening, and I think wonderful points have been brought up by many of the people, and you've been saying wonderful things, and I was reviewing a book I read in 2018 by a guy named Daniel Ellsberg.
Ah, Daniel Ellsberg, one of my heroes.
Yeah, The Doomsday Machine.
Right.
And I had never really been aware, and he sketches it in pages 136 or so, other places, that once he and a few other people started looking at the casualties from a little nuclear exchange, maybe between Russia and the U.S., or maybe just assuming that one of the two decided to unleash a few bombs, maybe a dozen or so of these magnificent super hydrogen bombs on the other, the effects would be fallout all over the place. And he said one of the plans we had was every Soviet city, and I think every Chinese city of population 25,000 or more, was targeted with one of these big H-bomb things. The result would be that the entire planet would plunge into nuclear winter.
Well, see, that would take care of the climate warming.
Yeah. And the casualties, he said, when they began to add them up, were up to about 600 million. And then somebody said, well, you have to add another 100 million. Oh, I'm sorry. They were up to about 3 billion.
Let me interrupt you for just a second. Sure. Which book of Ellsberg's are you referring to?
The Doomsday Machine.
Okay, thank you.
Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner, published in 2018.
Okay.
2017. I'm here.
Yeah.
And so still, he says the estimated fatalities to the Soviet Union and surrounding states, which might include our own allies, would be, and if we did China too, would be around 3 billion or maybe another few hundred million. And I read this again this morning and I thought 3 billion. And he said, yeah, but maybe it might be another billion, something like that. And that's something to think about.
So no, anyway, I'd rather not think about it.
You guys have a terrific topic here, but the Marshall Plan was in the context of this war planning. Kennedy really didn't know what was going to happen if we, you know, the big conflict was touched off. And many of the top planners weren't talking to important people who thought they were part of the loop. And that book is worth a read by Ellsberg, The Doomsday Machine.
Well, I want to thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
And I think it's important to understand that the reason why the Cold War, as it was a struggling event, was abandoned in its format was because the science community was absolutely clear about nuclear winter. It would have been a disaster. And everybody said,
You're saying that's why the Cold War was abandoned?
Yeah.
I disagree.
Okay.
Well, this could open
a whole
can of worms. Cold War was abandoned because the Soviet Union effectively bankrupted itself with its decades-long occupation of Afghanistan.
Yeah, I'm not going to... since you mentioned Afghanistan, historically, going into Afghanistan has been a disaster for every nation, going all the way back to Alexander the Great.
Yeah, absolutely has been.
So...
I want to read a few more tweets.
Oh, go for it.
From our president. This is from 2011. In order to get elected, Barack Obama will start a war with Iran. This is from 2012. Barack Obama will attack Iran in order to get reelected. 2013. I predict that President Obama will at some point attack Iran in order
to save face.
Donald Trump.
Oh, Donald Trump.
2013. Remember that I predicted a long time ago, 2 years, that President Obama will attack Iran because of his inability to negotiate properly. Not skilled.
Not skilled. just intelligent.
Yeah. There's always a tweet with this guy from somewhere back in history.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's just not fair to point out all the stupid things he said.
I think Trump was like a proto-tweeter. I think in his mind he was composing tweets, and they merely needed a place to take true form. He actually needed a social media platform that was designed for his, you know, thinking in 144 characters or less.
Really?
He was just waiting for it to emerge.
Hey, we got a lot of people calling us. I don't know how much time we have, but let's go out to Dennis. You're on the air.
Even Joe.
Yeah.
In that President Eisenhower's farewell speech, the segment called The Warning, both of you take a look at the word spiritual.
I'm sorry, I don't have it at hand. What are you
referring
to?
Well, when you read it, maybe next show you can bring that out. He used the word spiritual. And one last thing is...
why? What's that got to do with it?
What did Eisenhower warn us about?
The military-industrial complex.
Correct. Abe, Joe, look up the word spiritual in that segment called The Warning. And one last thing, a creepy piece in what's happening in Portland, Clyde Lewis.
Okay. I don't know Clyde Lewis.
We're not going to have time to follow that, but thank you very much for the call.
Let's go to Paul.
Paul, good morning, Paul. Real quick.
Harry.
Hey, greetings, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
The Iranian general that was killed in Iraq, he was there legally.
Oh, yeah. No. He was violating no law. He probably, it turns out, was trying to negotiate a deal between Saudi Arabia and Iran, who are always enemies because of a long ago split in Islam.
Yeah, he was there legally. So this is murder. That's all it is.
It's
downright murder. Call it what it is. He murdered him.
Yes. Know? No question about that.
And what's the Iranians' response? Well, I'm not too sure if they'll do anything. Everyone's just outraged about this happening. But the last caller was talking about the nuclear bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was called the neutron bomb. They decided to build a neutron bomb that would kill people and leave the building standing.
I do remember that process, yes.
Yeah. And but that's the solution. If Russia or China can give every nation in the world 20 nuclear bombs, we wouldn't have, that would keep us from attacking them.
Well, you're assuming there's some kind of rational process here. I think there isn't, so...
If China gave, or Russia gave Iran 20 nuclear weapons, gave North Korea 20 nuclear weapons, Venezuela, or anybody who wants one, 20 nuclear weapons, hey, that would protect them from us.
Well, we don't have time to go into the suggestion there, but I don't think nuclear weapons are good protection for anybody in any context. Yeah, so we'll have to just disagree on that. But, you know, it's a kind of a cute idea. Wow.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you for the call. I think we have time for one more. Let's go to Harry. Good morning, Harry.
That was Harry.
No, we're...
All right, I'm...
It's just us.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah,
we're
it's just
all
us.
All alone.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I want to close, then, by saying this. We are in the midst... This is not hyperbole. We are in the midst of a full-blown... constitutional crisis in the United States of America. We have a sitting president who has been impeached for only one of the many impeachable offenses he has committed. We have a pending war with a foreign power that, in all likelihood, based on all appearances, will unfold in an illegal and unconstitutional manner, motivated in large part, if not entirely, by the president's desire to distract from his impeachment and to set the political stage for his reelection. We are going to be bombarded by pro-war propaganda. We are going to see lots of targeted advertisements on broadcast and social media, like the ones described in Amy Goodman's show this morning. This is a full-blown constitutional crisis. We need every American who cares about representative democracy to get up and mobilize.
Yeah, this is no time to sit on your hands, folks.
Absolutely not. We're going to be investigating both of these situations, impeachment and the war, in further detail coming up.
Yeah, this is a real serious emergency. And we want to thank you all for listening to KBOO. We're giving you the best we can, and we're doing the hardest work we can. And we want to emphasize the role that this station is playing uniquely, sadly, in this city.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, professor and activist Robert Hackett talks about the Canadian Trans Mountain Pipeline and the book he co-authored, Journalism and Climate Crisis. At 10 on Flashpoints, we hear from multi-award-winning filmmaker John Pilger on the assassination in Baghdad. At 11 on Stage and Studio, DMA starts the new year off with the first of three shows featuring original works during the Fertile Ground Festival. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Amanda Clem speaks with Ebenezer Galuzzo about his exhibition As I Am at the Paragon Arts Gallery. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all of your favorite cable programming, then download our mobile app today.
The Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center wouldn't exist without the local folks who volunteer their time to help the homeless. In episode 4 of the third season of Local Folks Podcast, we meet Tiana, Pete, and John to learn what they do, why they volunteer, and what they have learned about the homeless and themselves as a result. You can find Local Folks at KBOO.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
KBOO Community Radio is working with Beautiful Portland to collect socks and blankets for those who are sleeping outside this winter. There is a collection box in the lobby of KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, between Burnside and Ankeny. Donations are accepted Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
More and more Canadians are really concerned about climate change. For the more, you know, more than ever